So let's see, last time at the, near the end, I talked about the class of functions that are going to have nice Fourier transforms. And Stein introduces this thing called the, we're going to call it M. They're going to be, that's going to stand for functions on the real line that decrease moderately at infinity. So, functions on the real line of moderate decrease at infinity. And that just means for Stein that they satisfy an estimate for big X that makes them integrable nicely. Moderate decrease at infinity. And so let's see, they're functions such that they satisfy an estimate like this. F of X is less than or equal to some constant M over 1 plus X squared. That's for all X, where M is a constant bigger than 0. So that, you know, the function I showed you, arctangent function, has exactly, let's see, I integrated 1 over 1 plus x squared using the arctangent function. And so that means the area under that thing is nice and bounded out to infinity. And so these will be similar functions. They'll be what's called absolutely integrable, because we can compare them to 1 over x squared.
Since integral from 0 to infinity of 1 over 1 plus x squared is pi over 2, functions in this class are absolutely integrable. And that's good, because it means we can do whatever we want with the tail end of the integral. So let's see. So, for example, we can write integral from minus infinity to infinity of f dx. We can write that as the integral from minus infinity to some point, a, plus the integral from a to infinity, f dx. And that's the limit as a goes to minus infinity. Integral from minus a to a, f dx, plus the limit as b goes to infinity of the integral from a to b, f dx.
And it doesn't, well, that's, yeah, so, and both these limits would exist if f is of moderate growth, because you compare that integral to the area under the 1 over 1 plus x squared.
And the nice thing about these things is that, so these both exist.
Shouldn't it be a to a instead of negative a to a? Because you already know.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you. So both these limits exist. If f is in that class. And another nice thing to notice is that we can simplify our life sometimes if we write stuff like this. For example, it would be the limit as n goes to infinity, and I could take a symmetric interval. Well, the classic example of a function that decreases at infinity but is not in this class. So note, Sine x over x is not in M.
Because it's only bounded by 1 over x, not by an x squared, 1 over 1 plus x squared kind of thing. So it does go to 0 at infinity, but not fast enough. And this classic integral we messed around with,
let's see, it looks like, and those humps get smaller and smaller, so the areas get smaller and smaller. So this was a classic example of a conditionally convergent
integral. It's not absolutely convergent. And so you can't do some of the things I did with this integral. For example, when something goes to zero rapidly at infinity, you can say that this integral would be equal to the sum of the positive areas above the x-axis minus the sum of the negative areas below the x-axis. Well, we showed you that those are both infinite. And so it would be like writing infinity minus infinity. And so this is a conditionally convergent integral, and it's not absolutely integrable. And some of the things I want to do would bomb for this kind of function.
So this is called a conditionally convergent, not absolutely. Not absolutely integrable. That's what one of our homework problems was all about way back. So here's some basic integration facts we need. For functions in my class. One is if I shift a function, x plus h dx is the same as the integral from minus infinity to infinity of f of x dx.
That's just a change of variables. I make a new variable be u is equal to x plus h. And you just see it. So that's an easy one. I guess the first and most easy one is that the integral is a linear operator. But that kind of goes without saying.
And here's the... I think I'm going to save these integration facts for next time. So I'll say C. Stein, and I'll talk more about them next time. So, etc.
But what I want to do today is talk about bump functions.
So a classic thing that we're going to need, I want a bump function that's compactly supported. So not only compactly supported, I want a bump function that's C0 infinity of the real line. So that means
it has a little compact support and it's infinitely differentiable. And unless you've thought about it before, you might not even know that there are such functions. An infinitely differentiable function that's has support on a nice closed interval. Have you seen those before? Have you constructed one? Yeah, so here's what I want to cook up. I want to cook up a function that's is nice and symmetric from between and it's supported in the interval from minus 1 to 1. And let's see, it's going to be 0. And then it's going to go up and be positive and symmetric. And come back down and be 0. And be infinitely differentiable. And I'm going to want this area to be 1.
Is this like the functions you need for a partition of unity?
Yes, that's a good place where they get used. That's called a compactly supported C infinity bump function. And you can believe they would exist, you just couldn't write yourself down a formula for one. But I'm going to write down a formula for one today. So let's see, step one. This is a classic example of a function that's C infinity smooth. Okay, it's going to be zero on this side, and then it's going to be real smooth over here.
And it's going to be infinitely differentiable.
So on this side, of course, it's zero. And on this side, it's e to the minus 1 over x squared.
When x goes to 0, 1 over x squared blows up, and e to the minus that goes to 0 incredibly fast. And in fact, it goes to 0 so fast, if I differentiate that over and over again, so let's see, it's clearly continuous.
And of course, it's 0 at 0. And they hook together. So e to the minus 1 over x squared clearly goes to 0 as x goes to 0.
E to the minus, it doesn't actually look like that, does it? As x gets big,
so here's what it really looks like. Oops. But the important thing is, it goes to zero incredibly fast right there, so it hooks up like that. So it's clear that this thing is continuous. Let's see, I should call it maybe psi 1, because I'm going to do several things in a row here. Psi 1. It's clear that psi 1 is continuous at zero.
And if I differentiate psi 1,
you'll see that things like, psi 1 prime, on the right, what would it be? It would be e to the minus 1 over x squared times the derivative of 1 over x squared, minus 1 over x squared, that would be 2 over x cubed.
But this thing goes to 0 even faster than that one thing does. Because remember,
that would be like e to the minus u over,
think about it. Yeah, remember that complex exponential dies away at infinity. E to the minus u dies away faster than any power of u.
So I guess if I write it like this, that would be equal to e to the minus u, I'll put the 2 in the front, over u to the 3/2. Where u is 1 over x squared. And as x goes to 0, that would go to infinity.
But e to the minus u dies away faster . Okay, I've got it backwards. It's u, this u to the 3/2 belongs in the denominator.
Sorry. Times u to the 3/2. So remember, e to the minus u dies away faster. than any power. Yeah, these are the limits you showed go to zero in freshman calculus. So it dies away so fast that even though you're multiplying by positive powers to U, it doesn't compensate. So that means the first derivatives hook up. That thing is differentiable from the right, and the first derivatives hook up, etc. And you can do that for all the higher order derivatives. So an easy induction, so etc. We see all the derivatives of psi 1 exist at 0 and hook up. So this psi 1 is C infinity smooth on R. And this is the classic example of a function that's infinitely differentiable but not equal to its power series. So a fact, psi 1 is not equal to its power series, even though it has infinitely many derivatives, because its power series would be the zero function. All the derivatives are zero at the origin, because of course when you come in from the left, they're all zero. Here x equals zero. Because its power series is identically 0, 1. So the power series is identically 0, but psi 1 is not. Okay, so that's kind of half of my bump function. So here's the trick to get a bump. So here's step two. To get a bump, let's see. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my first bump function and shift it a little bit. So let's see. I want to make it, I'll shift it over. Yeah, I want it, here's minus 1, here's minus a half. My shifted function's going to look like this. So this is going to be psi 1 of x minus a half. That shifts it over. Now I'm going to flip that around, and that's going to give me let's flip it. So let's see, this one's going to be 0 over here. It's going to be 0 till I get to a half, and then it's going to do that thing. And it hooks up. This is supposed to not look like a kink. This is really nice and smooth here. Let's see, what would the formula for that thing be? It would be phi 1 of minus x minus a half. That would take that graph and flip it over. And now if I multiply those two together, there's my C infinity bump. So let's see, it's going to be 0, nice to 0 till I get to minus a half. Absolutely flat 0. And then here it turns on, and it's positive. And here it turns off, and goes back down to being zero, and it's infinitely differentiable. So this, let's call this psi 2, is going to be the product of the two above.
That gives me a bump, and it's positive, and it's symmetric about, it doesn't look symmetric, but it's symmetric about the origin.
I like that. Well, the problem is I wanted the area also to be 1.
So that area might not be 1, but it's something, and then I can scale by it to make the area be 1.
So finally, the next one, let's let C be the integral from, even though it's a little, that's only an integral on the 1/2 thing, so let's see, this would be the integral of phi 2 dx. That would be the same as the integral from minus 1/2 to 1/2. That's just some number, and it's positive. And so my last thing, the thing I actually want, is phi, my bump function, is equal to 1 over c times phi 2. And this has the properties of, well, it's going to be like the properties of a good kernel. Phi is in C0 and infinity.
That means compact support, and in fact, the support,
let's see, do you know this notation? SUPP of phi, that's equal to the x, such that phi of x is not equal to 0. That's the definition of that thing. It's compact, and it's actually contained in minus 1/2, 1/2. By the way,
this is always a closed set. And so it's a closed set, and it's in this interval, so it's bounded. It's closed and bounded.
So phi has compact support. The zero set of a continuous function is always closed. Let's see, some other great properties of it. Well, let's call that number 1. It's symmetric, the way I cooked it up, meaning that phi of minus x is equal to phi of x. I like that. Its integral is 1. And I guess I should have said it's always greater than or equal to 0. The Dirichlet kernel has similar properties, but it's allowed to be negative. And that caused some problems, because that gave us something that wasn't absolutely integrable in the limit. And that was a mess. So this is a better one, because it's always positive. I should say non-negative. Okay, those are the good things. And so there's something called an approximation to the identity that we can cook up with this thing.
What I want to do is cook up a bump function that gets skinnier and skinnier and has the same properties.
So here's what I'm after. I'm after a little skinny bump function. It gets gigantic. It's going to be 0. And then whammo, it gets gigantic. And I want the area under this bump to be 1. So I'm thinking here's minus epsilon to plus epsilon. And I want the area to be equal to 1.
That's what I'm thinking of as an approximation to the identity. they call that thing an approximation to the identity. And it needs to have area one and be compact and supported in a very small interval like that.
And now that I've got my basic bump function, it's easy to cook this thing up. Let's call phi epsilon of x is going to be 1 over epsilon phi x over epsilon.
That's going to squish my function down toward epsilon, and to make the integral 1, I have to blow it up by 1 over epsilon. And so that peak there is going to get bigger and bigger. Okay, so all I have to check, it's clearly positive. That support gets squished in the right way, because when x gets to be epsilon, then this ratio is 1, so it's 0 outside epsilon. That's no sweat. All I have to do is to check that the integral is what I say it is. And that requires just a change of variables formula. The minus the integral here, let's think, that's actually an integral from minus epsilon to epsilon. And if I so that's equal to the integral from minus epsilon to epsilon of 1 over epsilon phi of x over epsilon dx. Let's let x over epsilon be equal to u. Then du is 1 over epsilon dx. And aha, that's what I've got right there. And then if I do the change of variable routine, when x is equal to minus epsilon, u is equal to minus epsilon over epsilon, that's equal to minus 1. And when x is equal to plus epsilon, u is equal to epsilon over epsilon, that's plus 1. And so when we do the change of variables, this becomes an integral from minus 1 to 1, phi of u. The 1 over epsilon dx is exactly du.
And so that's 1.
Okay, so when you approximate something by the identity, here's what the plan is. So
here's what we mean by approximation to the identity. It means when I convolve this thing, this bump, with an f, I get f back almost.
But the amazing thing is that usually this convolution is a much better thing than f. So for example, if f is only continuous, this convolution is going to be infinitely differentiable. And so I'm going to have an infinitely differentiable function that's close to this f.
That's cool.
And that's what we're going to use it for. We're going to be able to show that the Fourier transform does nice things to functions like this that are nice, infinitely differentiable, wonderful functions, and that's how we're going to see that it holds for general functions. So we got to smooth them out and make them nice by using this approximation to the identity trick.
So to do that, I've got to define the convolution. So we'll write f convolved with g of x is equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity of x, f of x minus t times g of t dt.
So you give me functions on the real line, and I get a new function on the real line. X is the variable, and t is the variable of integration. And it turns out that if these things go to zero at infinity, like the functions of moderate decrease, then this convolution makes good sense. Okay, so let's think about convolving my approximation to the identity with something.
Let's take, so I should maybe say, this is well-defined, certainly well-defined. When F and G are both in this class M. Okay, let's think about my approximation to the identity convolved with F. Okay, that would be equal to an integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi epsilon of x minus t times f of t dt.
And I could do a change of variables.
I could let this be a new variable, how about tau, then I would have d tau is minus dt, and I could do the change of variables and see that this is equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi epsilon of tau f. T is equal to x minus tau, isn't it? Yeah.
And this should feel like a good kernel. Here's this big bump thing that gets gigantic. And this feels like a Poisson kernel thing. This is like the Poisson kernel that's this great big bump in a little tiny interval. And here we have F centered at X. So notice that.
So here's the big trick. It's like a good kernel. Let's see, f of x is equal to f of x times 1, and that's equal to f of x times the integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi epsilon of tau d tau. And I can pull that inside the integral. It's just a constant. I guess I'm beating this to death.
All right, if you look at my thing about there, if I subtract those two things, I'm going to get a phi sub epsilon times something. And it's just going to be f of x minus tau minus f of x.
And so phi epsilon convolved with f at x minus f of x is equal to integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi epsilon x times f of x minus tau minus f of x d tau.
And this thing is supported on a little tiny interval, so this is actually equal to
integral from minus epsilon to epsilon of phi epsilon of x times this.
And of course, if f is continuous, this is small. And this, if this is the epsilon, let's see, this is going to be the epsilon that's usually the delta. But if I want to make this less than something,
This would be small on a small interval centered about zero. Tau equals zero.
So let's say this is small. I've already got one epsilon, so I'll make this absolute value less than e if tau is less than delta.
So if my epsilon is less than delta, you don't hear that very often, then I would have that estimate. And I could
do this. My phi sub epsilon convolved with f minus f is going to be less than when I take the absolute value inside the integral, the great news is that since phi is positive, or non-negatives, I don't have to put it around there, and I get my e here. I'm sorry, look what I did. I made that x. This is a tau. Sorry about that. And I can pull the e out. And of course, the reason this kernel is a bump, is an approximation, is because this integral is 1. And so,
give me any old e error, I can make that small if my epsilon is less than delta. So what I've done is I've approximated my continuous function by this nicer thing.
So I should say if my epsilon is less than delta.
So I've nicely approximated my continuous function. So if f is continuous, it's uniformly continuous on big intervals, and so I could make this thing hold uniformly.
So here's a fact. If f continuous on an enclosed interval, say AB, then there exists a C infinity function. Let's see, if I'm given an epsilon bigger than zero, then there exists a C infinity function such that, let's call it F sub epsilon, such that F minus F sub epsilon is less than epsilon on AB. So I can approximate continuous functions by infinitely differentiable functions. That's a nice thing to know. And so how would you actually, if somebody wanted me to demonstrate that? Here's how. My F sub epsilon would be a convolution. I'd have to think about how small I need to make my thing here. So I'll call this phi sub delta convolved with f.
First, I'd extend f to the whole real line.
So that I could do this. That'd be pretty easy to do. I could extend it by little linear functions back down to zero.
And then I take this convolution. And all I have to do is show you that I can differentiate under the integral sign in the convolution operator thing.
So let's notice that if I were to write phi convolved with f, that's an integral from minus infinity to infinity. I'll leave the x here this time.
I can differentiate under this thing. And if, as long as the derivatives pile on the phi, I can do it over and over again.
So if I take the difference quotient, for example,
that would be equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi of x plus h minus t minus phi of x minus t over h f of t dt.
And because phi is infinitely differentiable, this goes nicely to phi prime.
And this isn't really an integral from minus infinity to infinity. This would be an integral from something to something. So I could make it be an integral from A to B, since it has compact support. And that would tend to the integral from minus infinity to infinity of phi prime of x minus t f of t dt.
And I could do that over and over again.
Oops. And so what I see is that my phi sub epsilon convolved with f is C infinity smooth.
Well, I thought it'd be a fun thing to do now, to use these ideas to prove the Weierstrass theorem.
About density of polynomials in continuous functions. Can approximate continuous functions on a closed interval, AB, by polynomials uniformly.
You can demonstrate this fact using exactly these ideas. All you need to do is cook up a kernel,
my bump function, that's a polynomial. So this is going to turn out to be a snap. Easy. With a polynomial bump. Function. Okay, so let's see, to make life easier,
I'm going to take my function, I'm going to take my interval to be minus 1 to 1.
So let's do a case. The interval AB is minus 1, 1. Okay, and I can subtract off a linear function. Okay, so we're going to do that. We'll subtract off ax plus b. That's a polynomial. And we subtract it off so that my function, continuous function, is zero at both endpoints. So I'm assuming that f is continuous on that interval.
And I can subtract off a linear function that connects the two endpoints to make those things zero on the endpoints.
And what I need is a polynomial bump function, and here's how you get it. Let's see. We're going to extend f to be zero on the rest of the real line. So extend f by 0 to the real line. And here's my polynomial bump. Let's see, the easiest polynomial bump to come up with is, let's see, this one. This is 1 minus x squared.
That's my first approximation at a bump. But I want to make it get smaller and smaller and bump and more bumpy and bump. I want to crunch the support and shoot up the bump and make the integral be 1.
And Stein gave you an idea about this back when we were thinking about uniqueness of Fourier series.
Let's see, what am I going to do? I'm going to multiply by 1 plus epsilon.
Okay, so that's going to, this is 1 right here. Okay, I'm going to, I don't know what my epsilon is yet. But if I multiply by 1 plus epsilon, I can make that bump stick out a little bit. So this is 1. Okay, so and this is going to go, it's going to go up, and it's going to stick out just a little bit. And I can make that interval where it sticks out as close to, I can make these like minus epsilon and epsilon. I'm not going to call those epsilon yet. This is going to be 1 plus something really small times 1 minus x squared.
And now I start taking that to gigantic powers. This part I can pump up by taking gigantic powers. It's bigger than 1. It's going to keep getting bigger and bigger than 1. So I take gigantic powers of that thing.
Take big powers.
Where it's less than 1, it gets even more less than 1. And where it's bigger than 1, I can make it get bigger, bigger, bigger until the integral is bigger than 1.
Take big powers until this picture. I want my support to be squished, but I don't care about anything outside the interval from 1 to 1. Okay, so what am I going to get? I'm going to get this little skinny thing shriveled down to 0, but I'm going to get a gigantic thing here and small here.
That's not flat 0, it's just really small. And I want the area under that thing to be equal to bigger than 1.
And I want this support here, well, I want it to be really small
between minus epsilon
and plus epsilon.
So it's going to look like my approximations to the identity. Okay, and then finally, let's call that area is equal to C.
Multiply by 1 over C. So I'm going to multiply by 1 over C. And so my phi that I want, I'll call it a phi sub epsilon of x, is going to be 1 over C times 1 plus epsilon to the 1 times 1 minus x squared to a gigantic power.
The gigantic power made that area be 1, bigger than 1, and I correct it by 1 over C, which would be less than 1,
and I'm going to make it 0 outside minus 1, 1. And so the solution to this problem is that phi sub epsilon convolved with f is going to be close to f. And what's cool is this is a polynomial when you write it out.
And that's one proof of the Weierstrass theorem. In fact, that's how Weierstrass did it. And I'll finish it off next time.
Okay.